Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast, episode 89. On this live stream, we're on five channels. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Permaculture Canada YouTube.
Instagram as well.
Yeah. Apologies for those who were expecting Travis. He had to be called away in a family emergency, so it's just myself and Lindsay. You're stuck with us.
So ask us lots of questions.
Yeah, that's true. And Graham's way up, loving it up somewhere on holidays, doing Permaculture Canada work.
Oh, yeah, he wishes he was on holidays. He's definitely not. So, he's working. He's over at the, it's a small farm conference at Purdue University. I can actually grab that. I've got the link here. I'll drop it in the chat for anybody that might be interested in seeing what's going on there. But a whole bunch of folks are set up, and he's got a booth set up on behalf of Permaculture Canada and Armagarden. And it looks like there's a lot of great talks that are going on. He's there as well with Vertical Grow, Keep It Watered. Steve Koontz is there with him as well. So I think they're sharing a booth and just meeting people. It sounded like there's a lot of familiar folks in the regenerative and permaculture field that are also attending that event and doing talks as well as doing the trade show. So if you want to check out that.
Where is that?
That's in Indiana somewhere.
Right. Am I the show Erie, Indiana?
What's that?
There was a television show called Erie, Indiana. Used to watch. I can't remember what it's about. I just remember that every time I hear it, Indiana. So what have you been up to on in February since we last spoke?
Yeah, quite a bit. So with Permaculture Canada, we're set to go to Austin, Texas, actually. So I know you asked about February, but I'm jumping ahead anyways because that's where we're going next week. So I have some links to share with everybody so that everybody can kind of look up what I'm talking about. But Graham and I are going to go down there with his farmhand, Julia, is also joining us, which is excellent because we're going to have a booth here as well. It's called Regen World. And there are a ton of speakers involved in this. So take a look at the link that is there, regenworld.net. It's running alongside the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas, which is a massive music, film, arts festival. So there's going to be tons of people in town. There's going to be tons of live music, which is wicked. And I'm stoked that this is going to be running alongside of that because there's going to be a lot of people in Austin, Texas, and that's reflective in the prices when you try to go there right now. But we're going to have a booth there. There's multiple locations. It's at a place called The Portal, which is about 20 minutes south of downtown Austin, Texas. And there's a whole bunch of locations on site where there's going to be different speakers. There's going to be panel talks. It's a lot of different type of regenerative businesses. So coming from, you know, community development perspectives and from technology and innovations and just a little bit of a different feel than other things that we've been to in the regenerative and permaculture field. So I'm really excited to be part of that. We're going to have a booth and do a keynote talk as well as a panel talk with another one of our familiar designers, Alex Pop. He's going to be on the panel talk with me and as well as Matt Powers. So I'm really excited to be doing that. Check out the lineup of all the different speakers that are going to be there. There's going to be a permaculture party that Alex Pop has also organized for the event with his organization, Family Permaculture, with Annette and Chanel. So they're all going to be there. It's going to be great to meet them all in person. I'm really looking forward to that.
I wish I was going to Austin, Texas.
Come to Texas.
You can all chip in and get me a plane ticket.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, I'm going to be heading off to Puerto Vallarta. I'm actually going to go get a Thai massage training. I know that's not necessarily permaculture-esque, but it, in a sense it is. It's keeping the balance in my life and also, you know, learning new things and having new skills as well as just really taking care of my body.
And where's that to?
A friend of mine lives in Puerto Vallarta.
And Puerto Vallarta, what was that? Is that Mexico?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to go stay at her house, me and my partner. And yeah, he's gifted me the training to learn how to do Thai massage because he does as well. So then, you know, we can trade vice versa, take care of each other's bodies, keep her, you know, it's going to be great. And also, you know, spend some time at the beach, you know, hop on a boat and go find some remote beaches and just really chill out and, you know, be warm, get away from the winter blues up here in Canada. It can be a little much. Sometimes we get a little bit seasonal depression up here with all the cold and not being able to go outside. And today's lovely, so that's great. But it's going to be a welcome reprieve from the minus 20s that we've been experiencing up here in Canuckchuck. But so other things, like I did two designs for the Michigan area. Hey, Cultured Art, welcome. And hey, Didon Life, I've also got you up there on Instagram. Welcome. Yeah, so two designs I've done in Adrian, Michigan, and Graham is going to be the installer on that one. We're creating a new process, the way that designers interact with installers, and trying to create a language that's a little bit more cohesive between design and install on the ground. So something that's veering away from very specific identification of plant choice and placement to something that's a little bit more broad. And, you know, if you're working with an installer that is permaculture informed, then allowing that creative freedom to happen in an exchange between designer and installer. So it's a little bit of a different process from the way I've designed in the past, where it's putting some more decision making into the installer's hand, because I'm working with Graham. Of course, it's very easy for us, you know, as me as designer, him as installer, to be able to, you know, talk back and forth and modify the design as need be. But really excited to try it out. You know, how is this going to work in practice from the designer standpoint to the install standpoint?
I've done that before on designs where I've just said fruit tree and then listed like six local varieties of different fruits and then nitrogen fixer, please select from this list. Because the client was happy with that and didn't want them named specifically. So I was able to do that and I thought it was a lot easier to give the installer a range of options and give them, because I think they were installing it themselves. So they weren't going with a restrictive list. I think they were afraid of going to the nursery. And what if this apple's not on it? Well, they could just go down the list and say, right, I'll have two of them instead.
Yeah, because especially when we're designing remotely like that, we don't know what the plant procurement is like for people in their areas. What are they able to access? And if we get too narrowed down on species, of course, we're going to make it very impossible for our installers. Expensive on behalf of the clients, right? So,
yeah, and a couple of years ago, there was a shortage. Is that shortage still there?
I think we're yet to see. I feel like it is, because when I'm looking at ordering things, I order in October, November. That's when up here, you know, they're planning for the next spring. What do we have to pull off the fields to propagate? So a lot of it was sold out and it hasn't come back. So I'm surprised to see that. And I feel like the demand for this is growing, but the amount of nurseries are not there. So it's as people are awakening to this, wanting to be more resilient for themselves and, you know, be responsible for their own food sources, I feel like people are purchasing up the stock that's available. But we don't see this big flush of people starting nurseries to meet that demand. So I think that there is, you know, there's a profitable business there that can take place. It's something that I'm thinking of even just as a retirement plan, right? Even just like plant trees. Just it's better than putting money in the bank, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it was one thing we discussed there, our last live stream last week with Travis and Graham, was the once you're established for a while, that they start building up your own nursery and build your own nursery stock. Funny enough, I did sign up with something from Dustin McGrory, was it? Yeah, Backyard Nursery. So he's running a 4-week accelerator program. And so he's selling an online course basically to try and encourage people to start up their own backyard nurseries. And has sort of a stick at the start is you only need 1 square foot.
Hey, Seven Fires Farm has joined us. Just want to say, hey, how are things? Things are fantastic.
How's it going? Is that Patrick, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't seen that guy forever. It's great to hear from him. Yeah. Patrick, you should hit us up and come tell us what you're up to, because you're always doing super interesting things out of your farm. I think last time, you know, was building an A-frame that I had seen, but I never saw it into a completion. So maybe he'll share that with us.
Yeah, I was having Mike Jones. I think Mike was helping him out.
Oh, was he? That's awesome. Yeah. Maybe you can drop in your course that you were just mentioning, you know, in the chat for people if they want to look up that. Is that something that people can still sign up for or not?
Yeah, if they Google the Backyard Nursery Man, that's not my course. It's somebody else's.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a Backyard Nursery Man 4-week accelerator program. So starting a backyard nursery. I just signed up for the free webinar. I never actually got watching it because it was too late at night.
Oh yeah, so, there's been a ton of online stuff, I feel, in February, you know, with different summits and huge conglomerations of people, you know, providing all this information for free, which is, you know, this is a whole other discussion. It's great to see. There's so much desire for this information right now, which is, you know, phenomenal, because I think everybody could agree that why aren't we all taught this in school? You know, this needs to be part of the curriculum. And I think as there's more accessibility to free education, that will then influence as our institutions are kind of modifying and changing over time. I think that, you know, this drive for this thirst for knowledge of the regenerative and permaculture field, I feel like this is kind of the steps that it takes to get towards these bigger institutionalized things, is make it common amongst more and more people, and then we'll get there.
Yeah, I think even within permaculture, if you look at previous guests in the podcast, there's some extremely talented designers have never done a PDC, but they've practiced for 15, 20 years, done all the free online courses. Mm-hmm. So to me, it doesn't matter as much for these things, and these universities that are charging astronomical amounts of money are becoming irrelevant, because you can get a YouTube education in 6 months, start a business, start a podcast, start a YouTube channel, and earn and have no debt.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like there's room for all of it.
Yeah. Right?
There's room for all of it. If you want to, you know, there's free education for people that can't afford education but want the education, they get it. That's great. And then, you know, maybe there's another, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum where it's like, okay, well, I want to do this very specific profession and I want to make sure I have all my bases covered and I want to make sure I'm getting, you know, the education that's going to be, you know, for say like for PINA, right? I've joined the board with PINA. So that's another topic of conversation. But where, you know, if you're going to choose to be a professional and apply permaculture in this way over and over again, you want to make sure you're doing the right things, right? You want to have a substantial amount of education. And that's, I think, where PINE is really excelling, is, you know, creating these diploma programs where they've checked all the boxes. They've made sure they're covering all the curriculum and all of that. So I've seen this discussion in multiple groups all over the place where it's almost like, well, it's this race for the bottom, you know, like who's going to offer the most for the least and all of this sort of thing. But as much as I see the opinion of people being like, oh, this is bad, this is awful, I also feel inherently like it just is. And, you know, I face this in photography as well. I feel like this happens to all sorts of professions and all sorts of things that become a licensed or registered or controlled thing. There's always going to be the open option. There's always going to be both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. So to me, it's everything's accessible, but it'll take, say tech photography or permaculture, it might take me 2 years to get there, 3 years, 5 years on my own to cover the curriculum. But if I go and do a PDC and pay someone, someone reputable, like the likes of Jeff Lawton, if I give him $1,000, well, I know I'm getting the best education because his reputation. So he's done all the work, hard work. He's filtered out the information I need and I don't need, mm-hmm. and then give me a grounding to go on. Whereas if I just done that myself, there's that doubt, but then that makes it accessible that the information is there. And I like to think that you can do a course, like if something particularly interests you in permaculture, like water or soil, you can dive into them and go, right, who's the expert in that field? Mm-hmm. What I don't like about, which was a lot of conversations online recently, was people saying it has to be free and you shouldn't charge for it. And then saying you're so this and that because you charge, or the best one I've seen was caused a lot of controversy in Europe, was basically someone had an unemployment price that was too pricey. I was like, people have nothing better to do than argue about this stuff. And my point of view is, it's if you want a free education, it's there. You can do free PDCs online. That's great. But if me as a designer, if I want to go to likes yourself and get a design or get a design job, well, I'm going to need a PDC more likely, unless mm-hmm. I've done some exceptional work and I have a good portfolio. So it's what you want to do. Your knowledge, I think, is important.
Absolutely. Yeah, and how you're going to apply it, right? So my experience when I was design mentoring before for Verge Permaculture in the past, it seemed like a lot of the people were there to learn the education just for their own property's purpose. So there was a smaller fraction of people that were going to be choosing this for an occupation and take it down that route. So all of the things are going to be there. And another thing that also comes up with this, the free education, the unregulated, the whatever, whoever is deciding to put together a PDC together, is that perhaps it'll reflect poorly upon standard permaculture practices that are thorough, because maybe, you know, you get this kind of, for lack of a better word, half-ass education, and then you go and you choose to be a professional and have poor practices, right? So I definitely see how that can be destructive. In the same vein, it just is. Like, this is the nature of things. There's always going to be that, regardless of the subject matter. So it's really up to the person, you know, and their integrity behind their choice and their motives, as well as the person that's hiring the professional, to seek those that have the integrity behind the work that they're asking for. So it really puts it into the vein of self-responsibility from both sides, in my opinion.
Yeah, it definitely does. Got it. There's a full podcast on this topic alone. Because I know it was that Jeff Lawton and Bill Mollison said, as soon as you get a PDC, you're okay to teach.
Right.
But then some people then say, no, you need the qualification. You need to do 2 years. And in the UK, you need to teach, or you need to practice for 2 years after your diploma. And you need to practice 2 years after your PDC. And then you have to get a diploma, and then a teaching diploma almost, and then you're considered a teacher. Mm-hmm. But that's just with the official people, you know, the bodies. But then that's a whole other conversation about these bodies. But I like the way Pina has gone, because I chatted the Jesse and Sean Maron, and like they're not what you think an institution would be.
Right. And I'm fairly new to the organization. You know, I joined one of their teacher discussions, and they asked if I'd be interested in being a board member. And I thought, you know, this is a really great opportunity. I got the feeling tone for the people in my first meeting. And that's really what I follow, is, you know, my general feeling about things with the people when I'm actually interacting, not so much history or future stories or any of that. It's just, how does this feel to my body? And yes, I'm going to jump in, you know, and give this a chance. And so far, I'm just really thrilled to, you know, be able to commune with people that have so many years experience of, and in different veins, right? Like in anthropology and ecology and in financial sector. And, you know, so it's different fields of people with different insights. So I feel like it's jumping into this primordial soup of mentors. right? So I'm excited to, you know, just see where it goes and see what I can offer from Permaculture Canada's perspective. You know, I think right off the bat, they saw me as a pollinator, which is, I think, pretty appropriate, right? I love making all these relationships and connections between people. It's not really a quantifiable thing that I'm up to when I'm really networking. It's a personal drive that I have, and it excites me to learn all the people doing all these different things, and I just want them all to know each other. And I feel like this is going to really help me flourish with that in a big way as well.
Yeah, I like doing that as well. And I like it when two guests on the podcast meet in a round table, and then I find out they're doing business together. It's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and then it's like that. You get the, although it's not, I'm not trying to bank social capital, but like, I'm sure it's banked somewhere down the road. No, it just happens. So I'd be delighted when things like that happen.
Yeah. And we're going to welcome up here. We got Sask Matt Mushroom Hunter. I'm thinking this is Saskatoon Mushroom Hunter. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us. And if anybody has any questions, comments on anything that we're talking about today, give us a shout out. Throw down your comments. That'd be awesome. I'll just drop in that I've got the Pina link here as well for anybody who hasn't heard about Pina, if they want to take a look at their organization as well. I'll drop it in there. It was actually a North American sort of unit that was suggested by Bill Mollison when he came and taught over here on the continent, you know, that maybe this body would be a good idea to start. So that's, you know, you can read all about who they are and all of that there.
Yeah, I think these things are a great idea. It was just a pity that the that went into the private chat, Lindsay.
What happened to it?
I think that went into the private chat. I think you have to put it in comments.
Oh, all of our links are in our private chat, eh? We're doing awesome. Okay, I'll put them all back in.
technical there. Yeah, I was part of a group that were trying to set up an Irish Permaculture Association.
Oh, yeah.
The bureaucracy killed me. It just killed me off. I couldn't do it anymore.
I hear you.
And just not my, I was coming off the calls annoyed, and not knowing what I was annoyed at. I was just annoyed at the sheer bureaucracy of it. And now, fair play to them. They're doing a great job. But they were setting up the I can't remember the non-profit or whatever. That was a whole discussion for months, and I was just like, I was just we met up in August, and then I was dying to get into it and, you know, start making content or doing whatever was needed. And 6 or 7 months later, they're still in the process of setting it up, which I do appreciate. Takes time, but that was just. The last meeting, I said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's, but everybody has to find their where they're comfortable, and I'm certainly not comfortable in that environment.
And
then we have the UK Permaculture Association over here. I still need to get them on the podcast. If you're listening, answer me emails. Yeah. So I'm doing a diploma with them at the minute, so I have to produce 10 designs.
Okay.
So it's like 2 or 3 land-based designs, and then all our sort of cultural designs, if you like. So one's a business, one's designing myself and the community. I can't remember the rest of them are.
Are you putting your portfolio up on your website?
Yeah. So I haven't submitted any designs yet. So the first one's a lifestyle design, I think. So I'm doing that with Laura Aldini. She's going to, song I propose, right? These are the areas of my life that I want to bring permaculture into. So from the home, career, I think there was 3 sections. And then basically out of them, there was 10 projects. So one's community. So right from my home, my house and garden, then moving out to my business and workshops. So I can bring people onto the site and run workshops on composting, keeping chickens, guests going to help me with that. And then right out the end, how do I bring that then out to the community? So it's like sort of three layered. So I have to produce a, and you have to use permaculture design principles. So they use like a Gobradamet, Sadamet. Have you ever heard any of these?
I don't even know what you just said. No.
So it's like Sadamet. Yeah, Sadamet. It's like Sadamet. So it's
okay.
I can't even mind now. So it's different sort of formal. They're very under their formal design principles here.
Okay.
So like, there's five or six, and then. I can't even remember them all now. So you have to use a different technique for each design.
Okay.
So Annette Argerbright did it, and she says it was well worth it, and it helped her knowledge go out. But it's a different approach than the US approach, basically. I'm used to.
Yeah. Right.
A lot more, a wee bit more stuffy, a wee bit more formal.
Yeah.
Right, but. That's English for you.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess the other things I was doing in February, I do have some notes here. Oh, we got someone's comment, B. Hendricks, saying, I plan to seed with the best intentions and enjoy the consequences. That's beautiful. That's awesome. Intention is everything. That's great. So I wrapped up the two Michigan designs. Now we're on to two California designs. So we were actually lined up to do site visits back in January, just before the fire started. We were going to go out to California to design two properties. So we've actually decided that we are not doing the site visits in person. We're doing those designing remotely, which is what we're used to. I'm excited to jump into some California stuff. Like, there's definitely a lack of rainwater there. So we're just going to be approaching, you know, all the eucalyptus that is also planted there, and, you know, seeing what we can do to get some more water infiltration to these properties. Cause you can definitely see, you can just see it drying out. You can see the watershed, you know, suffering in, as you look over the topography, even just on Google Earth, you can see all of that very apparently. So it's going to be great to right away put some things into practice for, you know, working with fire and also working with increasing infiltration into the soil capacity, as well as covering up bare soils with tree cover so that we're not getting that exposure that they're currently seeing. Another thing that I did was my first podcast with Steve Bonnewell. So I learned a ton. Of course, I'm using OBS. So it's a lot of really techie stuff on my behalf and audio. You know, I have a ton of video experience, but I don't have a lot of audio experience. So it's a big learning curve for me now, you know, editing audio in hindsight and knowing how I have to go the next time around. Because I don't know if for you, if all the audio is quite regulated for your podcast because of the systems that you're using with the DuckDuckGo or whatever this thing is we're on.
StreamYard.
I just see the duck.
All right, Shawnee Groves from Minnesota. Well, they're getting a blizzard there.
Blizzard time. I feel
I think StreamYard manages the sound. Sometimes the only thing I have to do is, so StreamYard now records your audio, my audio separate. And if it's not a live recording, I adjust the sound. Just sometimes someone's microphone's higher, and I just I do that in DaVinci Resolve. OBS, for the time I have, I don't have the time to learn OBS and get all, so I'm sticking with this. I might move to Riverside next month because Riverside allows me to stream to 10 channels. And I'm thinking 10 channels. Because I've just applied for I got TikTok Live approved on my account. I don't know how, because I think you need over 1,000 subscribers and I don't.
Yeah.
But it gave me the live, so I take it. But then when I went to go live, I had a send my ID in and a picture, so it takes 24 hours. It was a rookie mistake there.
Oh.
So I'm hoping they go live on TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube. So it's getting all the platforms. So I ran out of platforms in StreamYard.
Ah, yes. Stacking them functions.
Yeah. just getting out there and enjoy the lives too, because the lives is just it's very. I don't have. There's no editing. I just download the file and send it off. I don't know how OBS works.
Yeah, there will be no editing once I've got my audio dialed in until I have some editing to do. But Steve's talk was really great. So that's going to be coming out hopefully right before I go to Texas. I'm going to get that out the door to share with everybody. So I'll share it with you when it's ready. And yeah, if you ever want to have Steve Bonnewell on your podcast, let me know and you guys have a great chat.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Thanks. Always happy to get guests. I'm flat out with guests, one of them. I'm not going through them. I've been doing 2 a week.
Yeah.
A couple of crackers that Alex Pop on there has episodes due out. If you haven't seen them, so if Alex Pop out Prima Walker, she's actually in California. If you're looking for compost, she runs a composting operation there, community composting. So she takes she was telling me last night, we recorded, and basically that California now you have to compost your home waste. So they'll pay farmers if the farmers get their compost to a good standard. So she goes out and teaches farmers and residential how to make compost to a certain standard so that they can then the government will give them money for it.
Okay, what was her name? I couldn't catch it.
Prima Walker, PremaWalker. She's on my LinkedIn. And that was a fascinating talk with her last night about compost. I love compost, you see. That's what chatting right about that last night. So that episode was out in the next couple of weeks as well.
Right on.
Who else was chatting? Yeah, we had a round table on sheep that's coming up.
Meh.
Yeah, so that was interesting as well. I didn't know anything about it. So we had Matt Munger on, Kerry Brown and Christopher Nesbitt. Matt was sort of taking advice from the two more experienced. They had one of the sheep in Belize in South America, and Kerry, who was the sort of main man, he's in Tennessee. So Matt in Colorado. So three extremely different climates there, all keeping sheep. I didn't know sheep were so versatile, to be quite honest. Yeah, and then coming up, we have interviewing Rob Avis in the next couple of weeks. Cass Sheldrick, about she's working with refugees. And then Grant Payne, the ABC King. So great variation there.
That's great. Yeah, and Shawnee Groves is just saying sheep wool pellets. She saw in her Northern Gardener magazine. Yeah, the wool pellets. Comment there.
Great stuff. Thanks, Shawnee. I'm not sure what wool pellets are. Sheep wool pellets. Do you know what they are, Lindsay?
Yeah, well, people are compacting them. You can use it to help infiltrate water into the soil. You can add some air, you can add some space. You know, it's almost like a biomass replacement, in my opinion, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Maybe Shawnee has a comment. Help retain moisture, yeah. Good old wool, warm even when wet.
Yeah. Every day is a school day.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure you can put like the bio fertilizer amendments, you know, biological amendments into there as well. Yeah. Well, the wool seems to be setting people off. So there's something about sheep these days. Also, the people are commenting on the wool pellets right away, right? I had somebody else I was designing for. They wanted to have an alpaca farm. They were just getting the alpacas just for their turd. And they were going to be dehydrating and selling their turd as fertilizer. And then right? You get the alpaca, you make the wool pellets out of the alpaca too. So it's kind of like dual purpose, water retention and fertilizer.
Alpacas. Yeah, I think there's an alpaca farm close to me. So I, B. Hendricks, yeah, in Ireland, yeah, it is worthless over here. I've seen an Instagram post from Gerd. She's on. She's a Instagram star, influencer farmer type. And she was saying it's worthless because she was putting it on her beds and people were saying, "That's what are you doing? You're throwing this away." I said, well, it's not worth anything. So when we got here, yeah, packed in the wood pellets. Shawnee, bottom of seed trees. That's ground cover mulch. Yeah, I've seen that during the week there, ground cover.
Probably make your own, you know how they make hemp mats for around the tree? You could probably do that with the wool too. I don't know what the cost efficiency of that is, but if you just got an abundance of it. Yeah, and then I've got, so that video we had talked about briefly.
Yeah.
So I've done a project last summer with what's called the Trochu Arboretum. So that's an organization out here in the middle of the Alberta prairies, which is like pretty flat, you know, monoculture crops all around. Over 100 years, this botanical garden has been growing here. So I have a couple friends, Kat and John, that are sitting on the board for that, and they're really enlivening it. And really, they've been, they had last year, they were part of Alberta Farm Days, which is an annual event here in the province of Alberta, where people open up their farms, and it's really agrotourism. There's tons of events going on. People open up their farms so you can go see how things are done. And at the Arboretum, I went and did a talk on permaculture there last August. And while I was there, I shot a whole bunch of footage of the market that was going on. And I shot my drone over the site, and they've taken the footage and overlaid it with the story of the Arboretum to share with people, and also probably to procure some funding. It would be great. I would love to do a map of this place, you know, as an educational piece. This is something that Permaculture Canada offers, is the drone and the video documentation of your site. But I'm really interested in the storytelling aspect of places like these that are community funded, community supported. It really brings together people and educates people as well. So to be able to create a map for places that are already like this, where they have a lot of plants in the ground, so that you have this sort of, maybe it's a QR code that you look up on your phone, and then you can, you know, find out what plants are where. So it becomes this educational tool, the like the design that's rendered from the site. But they've taken the footage here, and they, here, I'll just drop it in the chat. I don't know if you want to share it from your screen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll do a technical experiment here and see if we can screen share.
See how we can do it. Otherwise.
Yeah, because I can't copy and paste now that link you sent. So you put that in the private chat.
Okay.
And I'll try. I've never actually played. So if you bear with us, people who are listening there, I hope we don't lose any. We'll just give it a go. And if you can hear it, okay. If you can't hear it, just let us know. So I don't know how I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I've got the option to present as well, too.
Do you want to do it? And if you present it, we'll give it a go.
Okay, let's see. I don't know which of my screen is going to share, so.
Well, it's 50-50.
Oh, here you go. It's coming up, so it gives me the option.
Okay. And then I add you to stage.
Yeah,
I
got it there.
And will we hear the sound now when you hit play?
All right.
Yep.
Our world is changing. We can see great shifts in the natural environments that we inhabit and the policies that guide how we conduct our agriculture. Our earth is calling for us to change, to align with natural principles of land stewardship. It's imperative that we apply our wisdom to cultivate healthy and resilient ecosystems that offer abundance and regeneration. The Trochu Arboretum is a legacy tree and flower garden that has been managed by dedicated members of our community for over a century. Our nonprofit society was established in 1989 and has directed the park as a community gathering space that encourages education, enjoyment, and beauty. A dynamic forest of many species of trees protecting a garden oasis in the middle of the Alberta prairies is truly an impressive accomplishment. The Arboretum proves the viability of creating biodiversity and abundance and beauty, which has been created and sustained by natural land stewardship. The Arboretum has the responsibility to educate the community about the significant impact that responsible agricultural practices can have on our collective environments. The Arboretum has the rare ability to show the benefits of long-term land stewardship while also having the vision to expand our projects and give back to our community. We will offer hands-on education to our local community of gardeners, cultivators, farmers, and ranchers.
Anyway, so that's how I make my
What is this?
My ABC. This is compost.
That's compost, and this?
Yeah, this compost I made. Let me see my latest shirt.
The impact of our education will expand into many new environments, ensuring regeneration of our lands back to their natural states. At the Trochu Arboretum, we are committed to building a future where the people are empowered with knowledge and experience to make positive agricultural changes on our planet. As our cherished park proves, it takes decades to realize the benefits of a seed planted. Our prayer for our program at the Arboretum is that the seeds that we plant in the minds of our community will establish many natural sanctuaries. This will return the land and the people to health, to abundance, and to prosperity.
Wow, that was class.
Yeah, so that's John that was narrating that. And him and Kat are doing a lot of work there to stimulate more interest and growth in their community, and it's absolutely working. Right, there was tons of people that were coming through that one day that I was there for the Elbert Farm Days, and they continue to offer workshops. And so I'd love to see more things like that pop up when you were talking about community projects that you're designing right now. And it reminds me of, like, last Tuesday I was in Edmonton for a policy meeting, basically a meeting of government officials and innovators in Alberta. So it's like it's pretty wild, you know. It's something new for me to go and, you know, speak with people like the institution heads of the university and people that are serving in office, and then also people that are spearheading private organizations. I found like a big interest in children's education. People, once they found out what I was doing, everybody I talked to was thrilled and amazed. They're like, whoa, that's cool. You know, I want to know more about it. Can I have your card? But the people that I felt were, that really wanted to go, like, have conversations with me, like, we need this. We need this because we're creating programming for our children. We want the children to bring this knowledge home to their parents, to proliferate into their communities. And we know it begins here. So like we were talking about earlier on in our conversation, how, you know, this sort of education, permaculture education, needs to be a little bit more in the institutions on a grander scale here in Canada anyways. Maybe I'll just speak for my own opinion. I'd love to see this in elementary. Like, we have forest school, so right now it's alternative programming, but for it to become the norm. And that's where, you know, if we're having these sorts of conversations in policy gatherings, then we're well on our way. It's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. So you did the videography.
Yeah.
And you create that, and you create the script, or do they write the script? How does that work? Just so we can encourage more videos like these.
Right? It's beautiful. Yes. So Yeah, I love it. That's my jam. I love doing the video. I love taking the video. I love flying my drone. I love all that, the artistry of capturing the images and all of that. I love the atmosphere and capturing the feeling tone of atmosphere. The story was their little baby that they put together. And then somebody else edited for us, which is great because editing is not, you know, I can do all the editing. I've been doing video for 25, 30 years kind of thing. So, you know, I have a lot of experience doing that. Editing is not my favorite. It's really time consuming, but I love doing the capturing of the imagery. So if anybody out there wants some site documentation, hit me up. Or if you want to tell a story like this, you know, even the creative writing aspect of things is definitely one of my fortes. And I did another project like that with Tessa, remember, in Quebec last year. I don't know if you saw that. I have another video too. If you want me to dig it up, I can. Hers is about the same length. Similar idea though, right? Like she's telling the story of the vision of her property. So
yeah, I like stuff like that. It was nice. Just as a side note, I always tell Mike Jones that he should do voiceover for video and offer that as a service.
Yeah.
If you listen to him, I'll send you his Pensioner Pond permaculture video. You should do voiceovers.
Yeah, I remember him doing videos.
Yeah, it's really, I just think he's, because I showed my wife as well a voiceover and she was like, that's really professional. It just sounds class, huh?
Yeah.
get Mike some work.
Right. You
know, I don't even know if he's looking for any.
There's another video that I dropped there that was also a February activity for me. It was going over to New Leaf Farms and doing a tour there. So it's all vertical grow. And these guys are next level. Like they come from an AI background where they've really dialed in an indoor grow system to the point where they've become water positive. So if you understand what that means, like they're feeding their systems water to grow plants, but they're also harvesting the water from the air and they're circulating a lot, right? And it's pretty phenomenal work that they're doing. Lots of robotics, lots of AI systems and stuff. So if you're interested in that, you can watch the video. And Kylie goes through the whole thing, right? And he shows, I asked him if he'd show the computer systems and stuff and talk about all of that. So
yeah, I was watching that one when I was all the planter class. Look at the technology. Look at this. Look at that. How does that work? Right? So that's right up my street there, all the electronics and stuff. Although, I did one project. I made a worm temperature humidity sensor that fed back to my PC through the Wi-Fi. So I was able to, using a Raspberry Pi, monitor the sort of temperature and humidity in the worm farm. And then I could tell if it was drying out. But it became too much like my day job because that's what I do during the day. I'm an engineer and I was like, no, I want the separation. I liked all the gadgets in it, and I thought it was really cool the way they had it done. And it's good that somebody's measuring that. I thought then that maybe they could, like they were doing all the measuring, all the gadgets, and then that information could be passed on to people who don't have all the gadgets. I'm sure there's optimum settings then you could tweak, and there's a lot of knowledge, I'm sure, and insight they've learned through collecting all that data and all that information and all that system adjustment. Yeah, I started thinking it was class.
Yeah, and I think a nice thing that it taps into when we start talking about how that relates to children's education, right? Not everybody has a green thumb or an interest in plants and all of that, right? But a lot of kids have interest in robotics and AI and computer programming and all, right? And they're almost two different ends of the spectrum. Like you say, you're trying to keep a divide, right, between your engineering and your work with the earth. To me, it's like organic, not, you know, like 90 degrees, not 90 degrees. There's room for all of it. So that's what they were finding. They do a lot of tours with schools and whatnot into their facility. And a lot of the kids were really tapping onto that. Like, oh, wow. Do all these timer-based systems. And then, you know, seeing how it was designed as well was really interesting to see. It's because it looks kind of like a video game, right? And you can open levers and you trigger things from your computer that are inside the system controlling the water and the humidity and all of that. So lots of room for educating about plant growth, but through robotics and AI. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, until the Stuxnet virus comes and gets it. Have you heard of the Stuxnet virus?
No, but it's just funny.
Just Google it. I'll spare everybody the details, but it was some job.
It's just the tone of the comment. You just know it just makes me laugh, right? When people are feeling like, you're going to Texas? Today was a great, you know, all the things that are going on in the world, but not to feed the division, you know, not to feed the beast of what's going on there. I'm really stoked. It's going to be all regenerative field people. Hey, Julia's here. So Julia's here on our Instagram channel. I'm going to get to meet her live and in person next week. She's Graham's farmhand. So,
farm manager. The boss. I think it's unbelievable what they've done. Just Graham going from one to two. And you can see that the amount of work's quadrupled that he's doing and the projects, and they seem to be, the two of them together, working very well.
Yeah, props to you, Julia. You're kicking butt over there.
Keeping Graham in line.
He is keeping Graham in line. That's great. he's in for it. He's going to have two against one down there in Texas. So good luck, buddy.
Poor man. So what else have we got? I had Marjorie Wildcraft on with Graham a couple of weeks ago. So we were talking about designing yourself in the community. So Marjorie came up with the idea of starting a seed swap. Mm-hmm. And then it was funny then because Marjorie went off and it was just me and Graham left. And we're like, two of us at the same time. Why did we think that before? It's so obvious. So I organized one straight away.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe a local repair cafe. So a repair cafe, they repair electronics, electrical devices, household items. Like you bring your stuff, your clothes with you, and they'll stitch it up for you. Textiles, furniture, basically anything in the house you want repaired. And then they have a library of things as well. So it was a good partnership. And I held a seed swap, seed and plant swap. So I gathered up some strawberries, some bamboo that I had propagated last year, and what else was there? Yeah, some red hot pokers. They're like flower just. And all my out-of-date seeds, trying to get rid of them all. It worked out quite well. We had six people turn up, which for like 2 weeks' notice, I thought was great. And then for some people, it was too early. They're thinking, oh, you're doing it next month. So we're going to have one in April as well. Where hopefully we'll have some plans starts, but it was a real success and I would definitely recommend it. It was great fun. I was talking for 2 hours straight.
Which people look? Guess your accent's not very novel out there though, is it?
there was one lady from England and the rest were all, it was all the same accent. Well, here's crazy. I don't know what Canada's like, but you can go down the road 2 miles down here and the accent changes. I don't know if Canada's somewhere, is it?
Not so much. Like people say East and West is a slight variation.
No, you literally have hundreds of different accents in Northern Ireland. And you can go from one town to the next and they speak completely differently.
Wow.
It's quite weird. so there is hundreds of different variations. It was good crack. I enjoyed it. Met a lot of people, met some business, past potential business collaborations. And really enjoyed it. I would definitely recommend it to anybody if you don't have one, they organize one. It was a great way and came back again all enthusiastic for the growing season. Said, right, let's get out in the garden more. So definitely well worth a shout. And then I had my first job. I've been working on my first local job. So I decided to bring in a landscaper with me to help me because it's my first job and I'm just finding the time scales are tight and clients want it done as quickly as possible. So I'm thinking, well, putting the clients before my own preferences so we can get it done quicker. So that's the updates on that. I don't know, have you ever worked with a landscaper suppose you're working with installers. It's 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 a local job, so I'll be there project managing it effectively. So ordering a shed, ordering a greenhouse, and having people on the ground then install it. So I'm not having to do everything first time round. And then I put to work, and I call that the Jose model in previous episodes.
Oh yeah.
Jose Ansalega was on the podcast, and that's what he does. Okay. He project manages it, so he brings in the earthworks, he brings in all the different skills of people, puts them all together, and he just manages it then, makes sure it's all done right.
Yeah, that's awesome. And really, that's a great kind of halfway point until we have enough installers that are permaculture informed, is to have that oversight. Somebody who is permaculture informed as a project manager, you know, because you can, it's a good way to teach people.
Yeah. Well, the landscaper is, although he's a traditional landscaper, he does paving and gardens. He is permaculture. He's knowledgeable about permaculture. Mm-hmm. So he is quite knowledgeable, and he wants to go the permaculture way. So it's a good way that both is working together. And hopefully if it works, we're both happy. Mm-hmm. So it'd be great if I could do the design work and he could do the install. It's a great team.
It is. I think it's an excellent combination, right? Especially because if you're working with the same person over and over, the designs have a certain language and legend, and having to teach that to each new person is something that I'm very familiar with. So, you know, as a permaculture project manager, to have people that are familiar with what your design language looks like, you don't have to reintroduce them to all the concepts of how to install from your imagery. And that's basically what Graham and I are doing, is creating a language between a designer and installer that makes sense.
And right. Then so will that stay within Permaculture Canada? Are you looking to, is this a product you're working on or anything?
This is how we're delivering our product right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, developing how to also translate into an installer language that can translate into their quotation process. So that, you know, part of the work is already there because we're already doing things to scale.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of information that we could weave together better than what I've done in the past, in terms of preparing people for understanding what the installation cost is going to be.
That's what I'm working at the moment, and it's quite a challenge doing it. So I have a list of about 100 plants they sent me. So it's I'm approaching it like, right, I have to price basically every nursery about, but then once I do that, I'll get an idea of what nurseries are out there and what their price is like, who's dear, who does what plant. So unfortunately for the clients, they're going to have to wait a wee bit longer while I go through that process for local nurseries, and then hopefully they're patient enough just to wait that few days they do all this pricing. We'll see how it goes. But it's turning out to be a monumental task.
Right? That's the thing, though. Like, you're a trailblazer, right? So you're doing the work for the first time. But, you know, when we're pioneering these things, it's the groundwork up we got to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and once it's done, it's done.
Right? Model it and replicate it, and others can do it too, and just make it easier for everybody else. So it's just creating new systems, right?
Yeah, and what I want to do as well, I don't know if you're doing it, is create a customer portal. So that with every customer, they get a login and an online login so they can access the resources there. And then you can give them more access to different education. So say they have a quarter acre site. Mm-hmm. Well, they have access to the food forest booklet. And then if they have a larger site and they've got swales on, maybe they get access to the swale documentation. But it's, and then you can build up a customer base. So then offer them maintenance. So you can really like a customer management system afterwards. So they're still coming back to your brand and your knowledge base. Mm-hmm. sort of keep them. I read this somewhere that it was if you're not building a customer portal, then you should be, mm-hmm. because then you're keeping that communication up with the customer. So I thought that was a good idea. So I'm going to try and build that out as well. But okay. it's just a WordPress plugin.
Oh, okay.
I could even be just giving them a username and password on the WordPress site and giving them access to certain things. So we already have a learning platform on our website. Mm-hmm. So I could just be giving them access to some videos that they wouldn't get. So it's like just adding some more value for the customers. And then just adding it over time. So it builds up and builds up over time. And then in 4 or 5 years time, then as new customers come in, local customers come in, they have access to all this local knowledge. So we'll give it a go and see how it goes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's,
you can teach me.
Well, I thought it was a good idea to have a customer portal so that they log in. And
absolutely, yeah.
And then they can share their photographs. If somebody upload their photographs, their site visit photographs, or if you change anything, you go, God knows. And they can inform me of, here's some, I don't know, rust on this, or keep that communication open with them so you just don't hand them a design and an install and walk off.
Right. So you have that right now, or?
I'm in the process of just, it's on the list. I want this first customer to have a portal.
Okay.
So by the time I get to the end of the design and install, I want them to say to them, log in here. So when I give them the deliverables, I can say, here's your username and password. Your deliverables are on this website and they're downloadable. Just go log on and get them.
That's excellent.
And then you're keeping them within your ecosystem, and then you can keep that communication open so that the direct messaging, and then try and automate that so that the messaging's automated. So instead of them phoning you on a Friday at 2 o'clock, you having to stop your work, pick up the phone, stop what you're doing, answer their queries, they go onto the portal, leave yourself a message, get an automated message back, maybe saying, yeah, we've got your query and we'll get back to you within so many hours. Or even put an AI assistant in there to try and answer them questions. Or they can book a maintenance slot so they can go in and say, right, we need our apple trees pruned. Can you come on the book me in for a Tuesday, have access to my calendar, and just book me in for a consult or a site visit. So
that's excellent. And then are people able to talk to each other and ask each other questions? Is there like an open public forum? There's probably a selection for that too, right?
Potentially. Yeah. But I say it was the customer management system. They manage that communication and sort of take that workload off that I'm not answering the phone, mm-hmm. especially if I'm on the day job half a day. And then as you get new special offers, you could get a good deal on 20 fruit trees, and you could just email them out, just that 20 people, put that mm-hmm. on there or whatever you pick up. I don't know. There's loads of potential for it.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks for mentioning that. That's excellent. I'm sure a lot of people might get a lot from that.
Yeah, thanks. Especially, it's easy to do with a WordPress website. And for people like single operators like myself, who don't have much time.
Yeah.
So we streamline that.
What is the plugin called?
There's a few plugins, so I wouldn't like to lay my hat on one. I'm still on the research phase of it.
All right.
But it will be in place by the time this design's finished. It should be in place by April.
Awesome.
So maybe I'll give a demonstration of it in April, and then that holds me. It gives me some accountability to have it ready for the next podcast.
I'm holding you to it. I've got a WordPress website too, and I want one too now.
I think every permaculture designer should have one.
Right.
Oh, if you're serving it.
Awesome. Here we go. Lots of comments in there. Thank you everybody for joining. We got a whole bunch of people over here.
Yeah, definitely. Local supplies, what I'm trying to do as well, because I can't just grow on my own. And then, it's time we missed it. Yeah, I was actually on the permaculture, the Pumcast, if you look that up, Billy Bond. Yeah, it's permaculture is my passion. Awesome. And Billy's great crack. So he's been on my podcast. I've been on his. He didn't put me on the YouTube because what we were talking about was slightly controversial and probably would have got him banned. But
right. I'll
not mention the topic here. I might lose some listeners. Yeah, the Pumpcast. Is there anybody else? I would recommend the Pumpcast. Now, it's a bit out there at times. Proper out there, like some flat air stuff on there and other stuff, but it's his permaculture stuff's 100%. So he's bang on that. But I watch his, I listen to his podcast all the time. I think it's brilliant. And then his son then is on. He's the permaculture consultant as well. He's quite good. So the two of them together make the father and son team. Very entertaining. I think it's great to watch and listen to.
Right on.
Yeah, and I've also joined Matt Power's Mastermind. I've been going to that. That man's a monster. 2.5 hours. It was like after 2.5 hours, I was done. He was still going. And then he started another session. Like, that man is and he just keeps going. He was just a lot of good information, a lot of good stuff on mindset, and a lot of good stuff on there, and it's basically sort of it's a master class in Mr. Harkin. Yeah, so I've been enjoying it, but it's been intense, and it's because at the time of night as well, it's quite challenging for me because it's late at night. So Lindsay, have you anything else on the list there?
No, I think we did a great job filling up the hour, just the two of us, and hopefully we can catch Travis another time, and I'll see you guys on the other side of Texas and Puerto Vallarta. I'm getting back on April 2nd, so it looks like we're lined up for the podcast like the day after I get back, so.
Happy days. Enjoy the variety of it. Enjoy the getting the film on as well. It was good. I think we stumbled through it rightly.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for joining us, and thank you for the comments.
We'll definitely get Travis back on if he's available next month. Just to touch briefly on Travis, he's the live stream he done there, he helped me get mentored. Ham and Graham mentored me on basically becoming an installer. It was really, really good, really helpful. And then he's launching his new design network, which I signed up for tonight before I came on there. So I think it's just if you're an installer designer, and he's building that network out for installers. So he's doing great stuff. So we'll get him on next month.
Yeah, it'll be a motley crew. There'll be four of us.
Yeah, but it's April then starts getting busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll do our best to make it the first week. We can't guarantee anything. And we're trying to get four schedules together is always a challenge.
Absolutely.
But guys, thank you very much. Lindsay, thank you.
Thank you, Cormac.
We'll see you all next week. I should have another podcast out on Friday, and that's Alex Pop from Permaculture Party. Great episode as well. So I'm holding a permaculture party as well for my install here. So I'm looking forward to that. So Alex has helped me out with all the information. He's going to help with the arranging as well. So I'm looking forward to see how that goes. And hopefully I'll have a date for the install and the party the next time we're on. Get cracking. Guys, thanks very much. It's been the Permaculture Vine podcast, and we'll see you all next week. Any questions or anything, just drop me an email. Anybody guests you think or any questions, cormac@vinepermaculture.com. Also, if you're looking for design, head over to permaculturecanada.world and make sure you mention that the podcast sent you over. And if you need help with designing anything from small backyards, the eco villages, Lindsay has it all over there. Yeah. See you all later. Cheers.